Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. Over the next 15 minutes or so, our goal is to describe the ups and downs, the ins and outs, the whys and the why nots of the most important story of our century. It's good to have you along with us. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 4th, 2016. And as usual, we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing,
doing
D.R.?
Great. How are you doing?
Great, great. So, D.R., there's big news coming out of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network this week. Turns out that MCAN is having its annual conference in March, and I had the opportunity to speak with the executive director of MCAN to tell us about what's going on. So shall we listen?
Sure.
So we're finally caught up with Carol Oldham, who is the executive director of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. How are you doing, Carol?
I'm good. How are you?
Welcome aboard. Glad to have you with us. Anyway, Carol, we, of course, this podcast is sponsored under the heading of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Tell me, what does MCAN do? Why does it exist?
So we were founded in 2000, and we bring together our chapters that are around the state. So we have 46 chapters around Massachusetts, and these are all local organizations that are working on climate change issues in their towns and cities and in their communities. And we bring them all together to learn from each other, to be inspired by each other, and to bring their voices up to a higher level, mm-hmm. and allow them to be heard and be more than the sum of our parts.
So MCAN is chapters, individual people can join, there's a website. I mean, there's all kinds of good things people can go learn about. One of the things I've heard that MCAN does is to sponsor a yearly conference. Is that true?
We do. We have a fantastic yearly conference that we do with the Toxics Action Center. And it is coming right up. It's on March 13th at Northeastern University, and it's going to be a really good one this year. So I encourage everybody to go ahead and get registered for it and to come and join us.
So that raises the question, what kinds of people should think about coming? Should it be?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Everybody. Uh-huh. So this is everything from people who've been doing community-level environmental work for, you know, decades, if they want to learn about something new, if they want to connect with other folks that are doing the same kind of work that they're doing, if they feel burned out and they want to get re-inspired, this is a great opportunity for that. And it's also for new people who've never gotten involved in environmental work or climate work in their communities yet, because it's a great opportunity to sort of start from scratch, meet people who are doing work that you might want to get involved in, and learn about the issues. We've got a lot of workshops during the conference, and you can learn everything from, you know, sort of how to set up a community shared solar project in your town to how to make a good banner for a rally.
That sounds great.
You know, great, we have all kinds of different workshops.
Super. So let's just remind everybody, this conference is on Sunday, all day Sunday, March 13th of 2016, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's the day of the time change.
Oh, boy.
So set your alarms and set two alarms, maybe.
And it's in the Curry Center of Northeastern, the Curry Student Center of Northeastern University, right?
Yeah, that's right. And they just actually renovated the Curry Center. It's a fantastic space. And it looks really great. It's very sort of filled with light and comfortable. And there's lots of during the renovations, one of the things that they obviously prioritized was space for people to connect and to hang out. So there's lots of sort of nooks with sofas and stuff like that. So I think the networking piece of the conference is going to be incredibly effective this year.
And people, it's easy enough for people to get to. Northeastern is on the Orange Line, it's on the Green Line, it is on the commuter rail Purple Line. There's parking around there. It's quite accessible, and so people should. How can people sign up for the conference? Where would they go?
So they can find it in our events page on our website, massclimateaction.org, or they can go straight to the registration page, which is localenvironmentalaction.org. So those are two ways that you can get to the basically the same place. And there's information about the conference. You can register there. We are encouraging all of our chapters to co-sponsor the event, which is a great opportunity for them. You get your name, your organization's name in the program, and you get two tickets. And it's essentially the price covers the two tickets, but then you also get that additional recognition of having your name in the program. So it's a great opportunity for our chapters.
Well, that's great. Well, we look forward to Sunday, March 13th at Northeastern. Carol, thank you very much for taking the time to chat.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Great. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So there you have it, DR. I'm certainly hoping to go to that conference in March. Are you going to be there, I hope?
Definitely.
Oh, good, 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 good. There's lots of big news floating around DR this week, and one of the bigger kinds of interesting pieces of news from a Climate Hawks perspective came out of the Obama administration just today, I think, the 4th of February, right? Mr. Obama has, or our political, the political website has said what? You tell me, DR.
Politico.com reported that the Obama administration is planning to announce that when Obama releases his final budget request next week, he will propose more than $300 billion worth of investments over the next decade in mass transit, high-speed rail, self-driving cars, and other transportation innovations designed to reduce carbon pollution. And to pay for it all, Obama will call for a $10 fee on every barrel of oil. While this proposal is expected not to be honored by Congress, it is certainly a conversation starter and certainly forces into the political discussion that's going on this year, a talk and a consideration of what to do about reducing carbon pollution and how to modernize our energy, our transportation sector for the first time since the Eisenhower administration. It's been that long since there's been a reconsideration of how we do transportation in this country.
Interesting.
And Obama is leading the charge on that.
And it is. It's the first inkling of the kind of price on carbon that you and I and other people have been calling for a long time now. I mean, this is literally a price on carbon. And what you said is $10 fee, which of course will be labeled a tax, but a fee on every barrel of oil when it comes out of the ground?
Evidently, and I noticed on some social media conversations, people were saying, why didn't he start at $20 a barrel, you know, and then sort of try to negotiate his way back down to 10. Uh-huh. Obviously, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, right, but the fact that you're basically saying that, you know, it is time for, you know, the fossil fuel industry to basically bear responsibility for the transition to clean energy. I mean, anytime that's put into the political conversation, it's always a good thing, I would say.
Well, it's interesting you say that this is all highly speculative, and I would say, I think you'd agree that it's more of a symbolic action than anything else, right? Because Congress is not going to sign up to a $10 a barrel oil fee, right? Just not going to happen. But it does spark the conversation, and it is interesting in perspective that you raise that since the Eisenhower administration, keep in mind, just if you don't know, I mean, Eisenhower was assigned to drive across the United States sometime during World War I, right? Mm-hmm. And he spent the whole time lost and confused driving around backwoods, and he swore that the country needed a highway system. And when he got to be president, he built the interstate highway system. If you look, you'll see signs that call it the Eisenhower Interstate Highway System, right?
Yes, yes.
And this is the same scale, right? This is a rethinking and a reworking that Obama is proposing to how we get ourselves around, right?
Exactly, exactly. And Think Progress in its coverage of this announcement notes how much, you know the huge climate impact of transportation and notes that this proposal will certainly, you know, dramatically reduce such pollution. They quote Michael Bruin of the Sierra Club saying that this move shows how, quote, President Obama has laid out more of his vision of how we can meet the Paris Climate Agreement by challenging big oil's stranglehold on how America powers its transportation sector, unquote. So there's obviously the usual pushback from the pro-fossil fuel sources. But as you know, the conversation continues about what to do to reduce carbon pollution, you begin to wonder if there'll be a pushback to the pushback.
Well, and I guess the other thing to keep in mind, again, this is part of the president's budget proposal. Mm-hmm. And you always hear that the president's budget proposal is dead on arrival in Congress, right? So, again, mm-hmm. it's a symbolic thing. But we should keep in mind that this is not an explicit price. It's not what we would call a carbon tax in the sense that we usually think of it, which is a price on every form of carbon, and it is not something that would be rebated back to individual people, right? The $300 billion over however many years would go into investments in infrastructure because it's basically funding the highway bill. But it does point out the subtle distinction between a carbon tax with a equal distribution of the revenue of a carbon tax back to all the citizens and what President Obama is proposing, both the price on carbon, and I really admire the president for what he's doing here.
It's interesting that this is occurring in the middle of this discussion that we've discussed before in Washington State over efforts to pass a revenue-neutral carbon tax there, and the pushback that has occurred from some groups saying that such a carbon tax has to be revenue positive because you have to finance a transition towards a cleaner energy and transportation grid, and that cannot be done through through revenue neutral means. It's interesting how the Obama administration seems to be embracing the argument that any sort of pricing of carbon has to be revenue positive, with the revenue with the collected revenues needing to fund a transition towards a more cleaner transportation sector. So it's interesting how that will dovetail, and whether or not what Obama is proposing is going to influence the debate in Washington State.
Well, it's so you have President Obama proposing a carbon fee to fund transportation improvements, cleaner transportation. At the same time, there's this quirky little thing that went on in a place called Iowa. I don't know, have you heard about a place called Iowa lately?
Yeah,
unless you've been living on the space shuttle or something, you know that this past week the Iowa caucuses happened. And they were won by, well, as far as you can be declared a winner, Ted Cruz got the most votes on the GOP side. So it's all kind of interesting, but there's this subtext, if you were paying attention, that Ted Cruz is actually on the same side as climate hawks when it comes to something called the ethanol subsidy, right?
Yes.
So do you want to, can you, I mean, can I put you on the spot to explain what the ethanol subsidy is, and then I'll make sure I correct whatever you say?
Well, according to Mother Jones, Cruz opposes what's known as the Renewable Fuel Standard. It's a federal mandate that requires fuels made from corn, sugarcane, and other biological sources to be mixed into the nation's gas supply. And the most prominent of these fuels is ethanol made from corn. Cruz says he wants to get rid of the Renewable Fuel Standard, as well as all government mandates and subsidies for energy. And he has recently described the Renewable Fuel Standard as yet another way in which the government is, quote, picking winners and losers. And the reason why this is interesting is that, as Mother Jones points out, ethanol is not exactly a low carbon energy source in terms of the production what is being done towards to produce ethanol. It can be very carbon intensive.
It's fascinating because we're sort of on the topic of how are we going to fund our transportation system, right? Mm-hmm. So that in 2005, I think it was George W. Bush. Passed this rule that would turn corn, that where farmers in the Midwest could use corn to manufacture ethanol, which would then go into your gasoline. And around here, you see, you know, 10% of your gasoline is ethanol because that's the requirement. But it was put in place with good intention, and it turns out after the fact, for various reasons, and some detailed in the Mother Jones article, but things like farmers went out and planted a whole lot of new land, which is a climate destructive thing, and the actual conversion of the corn to ethanol is takes more carbon than, you know, getting gasoline out of the ground, right?
Exactly.
So it's just funny that from a climate hawk perspective, you no longer like the ethanol standard, which at one point you thought you did. And mm-hmm. of course, your political bedmate is Ted Cruz, which is a shocking thing to find out that you agree with Ted Cruz on whether or not there ought to be this renewable energy standard.
But it's a pretty corny situation.
Oh my God, you're a piece of work, DR. I think though, there's a couple of, there's two things that I take out of the Ted Cruz ethanol story. Mm-hmm. One is that since climate change is the most important story of the century, and we're going to have to take big policy decisions, sometimes you're going to make a mistake. Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a policy isn't going to work out. Right. Mm-hmm. And we as climate hawks need to be ready to change the policy if it's not good and have the gumption to stick by the guns, even if a particular policy doesn't work. Right. Because over the course of 20, 30, 50 years, some things are going to go right. There's going to be a cylinder here or there. There's going to be good and bad. You have to stick with the issue. And the second thing that I take out of this, and of course, this goes round all the way back to Obama and the price of the $10 fee, the farmers in Iowa, basically because they're in Iowa and that's where the caucus is, get to distort the entire presidential election over this issue of corn. But they are a dedicated constituency that is going to fight for that subsidy, that money, tooth and nail. And I think if there was a carbon tax that was evenly rebated to every U.S. citizen, every citizen would fight for that. You know, they would not let that tax go away. You would have this instant national constituency that protect and nurture that carbon tax, because most people would be making money, right?
Exactly. It would be a sort of self-sustaining policy, that's virtually impossible to repeal.
Right, and again, this when you're looking at a 50-year time span, you don't want to get into a situation where, you know, in the year 2029, times are good, carbon's down a little bit, and they say, forget that tax, we got to power the economy, right? You want a thing that's built for the long haul.
Something that's built to last.
It's built to last. Well, anyway, Mr. Cruz, God bless him for his global warming stance. He's a climate hawk in hiding, right?
Exactly.
With his wings folded. So there's one last story we got to touch on, DR. It comes to the point of sort of these hard policy decisions that need to be made as we fight the fight going forward, as we try and convert to a clean energy economy. I mean, right now in the U.S. Senate, there is what's called it's not the omnibus energy bill, but it's an overall energy bill, right? It's a new energy bill that has been proposed. It's not that earth-shaking from a climate hawk's perspective, although it does have a lot of stuff for energy efficiency and renewable power. It's a good bill, right? But recently, the Democratic side of the Senate has basically walked away from that energy bill in order to demand that $300 million for the rebuilding of the Flint, Michigan water supply be included. It's fascinating collision. I don't know if it's you want both things, right? You want both things, right? So in a sense, you're playing chicken. It's just amazing that this is where it comes to a head. I wouldn't have thought. I mean, I certainly, I hope those guys get the money, right?
Exactly, and to think that it has to go to this level instead of basically an emergency action to sort of get that money and to not have these sort of squabbles over trying to help people get a basic human right called water. Right. It's good to see people fighting to make sure that money is there to sort of put in the new pipes and to get some clean water to the residents of Flint. But why should it even be a fight? For politicians who profess to be pro-life, you figure that the most pro-life action in the world would be to make sure people have clean water to drink.
Right, and we have discussed before the climate connection to clean water and how the Flint thing is, but it's just amazing stuff going on. I guess that's the I don't know, dear. I don't know. Anyway, look, we got to leave it there. Let me tell our listeners they can find out the links to most of what we discussed at the blog. It's massclimateaction.net/blog. It also comes up if you type in massclimateaction.org/blog. Turns out we've got both of those extensions covered. And if you go to that massclimateaction.org/events, you can sign up for the conference at Northeastern University on March 13th. It's a Sunday. It's easy to get to. It's going to be very, very interesting. You can find the more about MCAN in some links at our Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. The show will be up there as well. You can listen to this podcast directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can find us on iTunes by the usual searching in the podcast section. Please review us. Please subscribe. It pushes up our ratings. So, DR, we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist the United States finally put up some kind of a price on carbon. Right?
Indeed, definitely.
Thanks, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.